Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Just want to make a small correction. The last class I gave, I said that Yadu was Yayati, but actually he's the son of Yayati. He's not Yayati, he's the son. Sorry about that. Prati Veshi Hangveshu.
Prati Veshi Hangveshu.
Pavistastadunashaya.
Pavistastadunashaya.
Prati Veshu.
Prati Veshu.
Composed of earth.
And
other elements.
Sihang.
In this world.
In this world.
Deheshu.
Deheshu.
It's interesting. Iha generally means like. But then we see that in this reference, he's translated as being in this world. Deheshu.
Deheshu.
Within bodies.
Within bodies.
Ravishta.
Ravishta.
Having entered.
Having entered.
Also means to be situated. You know, Pravishta. You know, there's Pratishta Acharya. So Pravishta. Very similar word. Tat.
Tat.
Of them.
Of them.
Guna.
Guna.
The characteristic qualities.
The characteristic qualities.
Ashraya.
Ashraya.
Having assumed.
Having assumed.
Guna Ashraya, interesting. Taking shelter of particular qualities. And that's actually, Krishna discusses that in the Gita, Prakriti Purusha, Bhunti Prakriti Gan, Karanam Guna Sangvasa, Sada Sad Yoni Janvasu. How a living entity takes shelter of a particular type of nature. And, you know, he wants to act in a particular way. Just like we see, you know, someone in a dog's body, for instance, is taking shelter of a particular type of nature because they're attracted to those things. You know, they take shelter of that mode of nature. They take shelter of that type of behavior. Therefore, they're forced to take that type of body. And we see that's actually what's happening in this world. You see all the different living entities have all these, you know, 8 million, Prabhupada describe, you know, all the Vedas describe 8,400,000 species of life. And Srila Prabhupada, interestingly, translates that directly into modes of material nature. He says you take the modes of material nature and you mix them. So there's three modes of nature. You mix three, you have 9. You mix again, you have 81. And you keep mixing and mixing and mixing. You wind up with 8,400,000 species of life, which in essence are just the results of combinations of modes of material nature. So because a person is taking shelter of particular modes of material nature, therefore they enter a particular species of life. Kamala, Deva, Netmena, Janta, Deha, Pataya. Because they're taking shelter of this activity, then they take on a particular type of birth. So here, again, that point's being discussed is Guna Ashraya, taking shelter of the modes of nature. Gunai,
Gunai,
with those qualities.
With those qualities.
Nayujate,
Nayujate,
does not entangle himself.
Does not entangle himself.
Yogi,
Yogi,
a yogi.
Yogi.
Gandhai,
Gandhai,
with different odors.
Vayu,
Vayu,
the air.
Iva,
Iva,
just as.
Just as.
Atmadrik,
Atmadrik,
he who can see himself properly.
He who can see himself properly.
As separate from this matter.
As separate from this matter.
So there's a very interesting discussion going on here. Translation. Although a self-realized soul may live in various material bodies while in this world, experiencing their various qualities and functions, he is never entangled, just as the wind which carries various aromas does not actually mix with them. Please repeat. Although a self-realized soul may live in various material bodies, while in this world, experiencing their various qualities and functions, he is never entangled.
He is never entangled.
Just as the wind, which carries various aromas,
which carries various aromas,
does not actually mix with them.
Does not actually mix with them.
So this is very, as I mentioned, very interesting discussion going on here. So we see that Yadu This is a story that is being related to Uddhava by Lord Krishna to demonstrate the point of how one can actually overcome the influence of the most material nature. How one he talks about this Avadhut Brahmana, because the other has met this Avadhut Brahmana. How even though he's living in this world and he's a very young, handsome, qualified person, he's not affected by the most material nature. He's not affected by the world. And so we see, if we go back a few verses, the king has inquired, Yadu has inquired from this Brahmana about how he can also overcome, because quite common, the saintly kings, they say, well, I'm just a king, I'm so much influenced by the modes of nature, I'm doing activities which are forcing me to be become contaminated by the modes of nature. So, what can I do? So the Brahmin explains that he's taking shelter of how many different gurus, do you remember? 24 different gurus. And so he lists them all in the 33rd and 35th verse, starting off with earth, air, sky, water, fire, moon, sun, pigeon. He's taking a pigeon as guru, quite interesting. And a python. There's also an interesting story about the python. Sea, moth, honeybee, elephant, and honey thief, the deer, the fish, the prostitute pingala. Actually, I think later on in the book there's the prayers of pingala. Later on, there's this section. The Parara bird and the child, the young girl, arrow maker, serpent, spider, and wasp. So he's actually learning from all these different personalities. And so in the few verses preceding this, 37, 38, he discusses the earth, and now he's discussing the air, how he's learning from the air. So with the earth, do you remember the lessons he learned from the earth? Tolerance. Just like we see that the earth, so many things are done to the earth, people dig great big holes. Actually, I used to live in Rockhampton many years ago, and there's a place in Rockhampton called Mount Morgan, and there's the deepest man-made hole in the world there. There's a huge big hole, there's a gold mine, they've excavated to get gold. Same as if you go to Kalgoorlie in Western Australia. This gigantic open cut mine, which is like made this big hole, the drilling holes to get oil. And the earth tolerates all these things. Actually, just recently, the earth got its own back. They were drilling this hole down to get oil or test or something like that. And then it disturbed something underneath the ground, and then all this mud started to erupt out of the ground. And that's the earth, they're getting a bit of a reaction. But generally, the earth is also very tolerant. So many things that, atomic bombs are being dropped, this thing and that thing. But the earth is very tolerant, she doesn't complain. What other lessons from the earth are there? Because there was three things discussed. There was the earth, there was the trees, and there was the mountain. These are all facets of the earth. So what about the mountain? What is the feature of the mountain? What does the mountain do? I know. You know what they used to do? Mountains. They used to fly. Yeah? This describes earlier on the Bhagavatam how Indra cut off the wings of the mountains because he used to fly, and because they're so big, they used to sometimes land on villages and things like that and kill people. Inadvertently, they didn't realize they were doing that. But Indra cut off their wings to stop them from flying. But apart from that, what do mountains do? Any ideas? They provide things for people. From the mountains, so much refreshing water comes out of the mountains in the form of waterfalls and streams and things like that. Minerals come from the mountains. Minerals which are used for fertilizing crops. Jewels are washed out of the mountains also. So they provide things for people. They provide things that help people achieve happiness in this world. So that's another fact. What about the trees? What do the trees do? Provide shade. Is that all they provide?
Fruits. Flowers.
Oxygen. Yeah, they purify the air. So many different things. And what's the nature of the tree?
Tolerant.
So tolerant. What does Lord Chaitanya say? Toro eva sahishtuna. Tolerant like a tree. So from the earth, you see like the sadhu, he's seeing these things. He looks at the earth and he thinks, oh, it's so tolerant. You know? Taking so much discomfort yet not complaining. And the trees are providing so many things for the benefit of people. The mountains are providing so many things for people's happiness. So he's taking on these qualities. He's seeing these are actually good qualities. This is the nature of a sadhu. A sadhu can see, you know, the good in everything. A saintly person will always see, and Prabhupada would talk about this sometimes, having this bee mentality. He's always looking for the nectar. But the tendency in Kali Yuga, and especially I speak for myself, is this fly mentality. What's a fly looking for all the time? Looking for sores, looking for stool. Especially not so much in the city here, but you go out in the country and you see some cow pack on the ground. What is it? It's covered in flies. I used to live, when I was a young boy, I used to live down near Geelong. And I used to, it was a paper boy, you know, we used to go around on a bicycle and deliver papers, newspapers to people. And I remember in the summer mornings, it was quite early in the morning, like my back would just be completely black with flies. And the flies, there's so many flies in the country, and they like, you know, smelly things, dead things. And they're very attracted to things. But actually, you see the saintly person, he has this mentality where he's always looking for the good. So in the earth, he's seen these various different things. And now, he's describing to Maharaj Yadu how he sees the air as his guru. So in these, I think there's three verses, 39, 40, and 41, that's the last one. The next one, he goes on to the ether. Describing the ether, how he sees the ether as guru. But he's saying, a learned sage should take his satisfaction by the simple maintenance of existence and should not seek satisfaction through the gratifying material senses. In other words, one should not care for material body. One should care for material body in such a way that one's higher knowledge is not destroyed, and one's speech and mind not deviate from self-realization. Even a transcendentalist is surrounded by innumerable material objects which possess good and bad qualities. However, one who has transcended material good and evil should not become entangled, even when in contact with material objects. Rather, he should act like the wind. So the wind passes over, the air passes over so many different things, not affected by it, keeps travelling, keeps going. So it's the same for us. So we need to develop this quality where we see, yes, there's so many things in this material world, so many good things, so many bad things. Yeah? We need to be unaffected by these things. Because if we become affected by these things, we take on the modes of nature that they're affected by. Just like we see something in the mode of ignorance. If we become affected by that, if we become attracted to that thing in the mode of ignorance, then we become influenced by the mode of ignorance. And this will cause us to take birth here again and again. If we can become influenced by something, if we become attached to something in the mode of goodness, we become influenced by the mode of goodness. And if we're attached to that goodness, that itself will cause us to become to take birth again and again. So we need to see how the various things in this world are influenced by the mode of material nature, and we need to maintain this aloofness. This is the lesson that's being taught here. The same is given in this verse here. We're saying that although a self-realized soul may live in various material bodies while in this world, it's experiencing their various qualities and functions. It's not that we're impervious to it. It's not that we don't see that there's variety there. It's not that we don't understand that yes, it has qualities, it has functions. The idea is to become unaffected by these things. It's interesting because the Mayavadis, they just renounce it all and say, no, I renounce everything. But actually, this is an immature approach because they're artificially trying to isolate themselves from the objects of the senses. And of course, in the beginning stages of devotional service, this is recommended, is that we distance ourselves from the objects of the senses so we're not affected by them. But ultimately, we need to get to the stage where we can be exposed to the objects of the senses and we are not affected by them. And the analogy is given there in the Bhagavatam of how when the senses are engaged in the process of devotional service, they become just like a serpent with broken fangs. So it's explained that, you know, the nature of the serpent is to bite. So when a serpent bites, then generally they inject poison. But when the fangs are broken, they can't puncture the skin. Therefore, they can't, you know, the poison's still there, everything's still there. But because they can't puncture the skin, then they can't inject the poison. Therefore, they have no effect. The senses still attack us. The senses are still attracted to the objects. But because the person is, because the mind of the steadily devoted soul, because it's fixed in devotional service, he's dira. He's not influenced by these various things. He's not affected when the senses drag or, you know, try to say, well, what about this and what about that? No, he's just focused. He's dira. He's focused on the purpose of human life. So this is being pointed out here. Is it, even though the steadily devoted soul is seeing the workings of the material nature, he's seeing the functions or the actings of the most material nature, he's not affected by these things. He's not distracted by these things. Yeah? Just like there's a conversation going on in the corner. I'm trying very hard not to be distracted by it. But it is distracting, ladies. Haribol, your conversation is distracting, please. It's hard to focus. So this is the point. And as the wind, and we see, like the wind, it comes through, and it's the same wind, it'll pass over. Who's been to India recently? Yeah? So you know what the wind is like when it passes over the rubbish stuff. It's like you get caught, oh God, that's horrible stuff. You know? And then it'll go down, it'll pass over a rose garden, same wind. And then a beautiful aroma comes, but the wind doesn't get affected. It still remains unaffected by these things. And so the devotee needs to be like this. The devotee needs to travel through the world, but be unaffected by the workings of the modes of material nature. And this is actually becoming transcendental. What was I reading this morning? I was reading something in relation to that. There's a verse that Prabhupada quotes. He says it's from the Shruti, from the Vedas. Asango hi ayam purusha. So this verse basically indicates, it's a very interesting Vedic aphorism. It's indicating how the jiva is actually not of this material world. It's this asango. It cannot associate, cannot come into contact with this matter. Hi ayam, with this, you know, matter, the purusha, the jiva. So what actually happens, though, is the jiva identifies himself with the workings of the modes of material nature. Yeah? Just like we were saying before, we get these various bodies because of the combination of various modes of material nature. And we identify, just like we see, you know, as mentioned before, a living entity in a dog's body is convinced he's a dog or she's a dog. They're convinced that this is who I am, I'm a dog. Why? Because they identify with those modes of nature. The same as we're in human bodies. We're convinced this is me. Because why? We identify with a particular mode of material nature that are influencing that living entity at that particular point in time. And it's just like, you know, when I was a young man, I don't know how many of you remember this, most of you are from Australia, but there used to be this song going around from a very famous Victorian. The song was called Rose Coloured Glasses. And so back in those days, coloured glasses were very popular. You know, you wear rose-coloured glasses and blue-coloured glasses and things like that. And the whole idea is you wear rose-coloured glasses and everything looks very rosy. So you look through this filter and everything looks in that way. I remember I used to have a pair of driving glasses and it made it much easier to drive. They were yellow. So everything was yellow. But it was actually quite good because it was very restful on the eyes when you're driving, it didn't become tired. So in the same way, the jiva, he takes on a particular type of body and sees the world in that way. It's just like you see a dog, takes on a dog body, and he looks at other things, you know, everything else in this world in the way the dog looks at things. He sees, you know, like other dogs, and you know what dogs are. You don't need to get into all the detail of what dogs do, but you know what they do. And that's because of the filter they have that causes them to see things in a particular way. Or we see a lusty person. Whenever he looks at they look at the opposite gender as a means of enjoyment. Or a greedy person, they're always looking for every single thing. How can I make money out of this? Yeah? A transcendentalist, they have a very special filter They look at every other jiva and think, how can I engage this person in Krishna service? So we see, well, you know, according to the nature, how it affects us. And this is how we look at the material world. You know? This identification we have is actually a misunderstanding. You know, because we see the jiva identifies with the particular modes of material nature. This is a misunderstanding because, as we said, asanga hi ayam pucha. We're not this material body. We're not the combination of modes of nature. We're actually a spirit soul, eternal servant Krishna. This point is clearly pointed out again and again. You know, the whole second chapter of the Gita is almost exclusively devoted to this point, explaining how we're not the body. You know, Lord Chaitanya makes this point very clear in the Chaitanya Charita. So many places where this is pointed out. Same is being pointed out here. We're not this material body, we're actually the spirit soul, we're a servant of Krishna. But currently we're in this situation, we're influenced by the most material nature, therefore we need to look at it. How can I get free from this situation? Therefore we practice the activities of devotional service. That in itself is enough if we are able to apply it effectively, but oftentimes because of the influences of modes of material nature, Jiva Goswami points this out in the Bhakti Sandarbha, that living entities in this material nature are very, very heavily affected by modes of material nature. Therefore we need to act in a way to overcome this influence. So we need to actually start cultivating the mode of goodness. We need to focus on cultivating the mode of goodness, but not that this is the end. Not that we just become to mode of goodness, oh, now I'm happy, everything's very, very nice. Because this is the tendency, is people, they come to mode of goodness, you know, they become habituated to performing pious activities, welfare work, you know, opening hospitals, planting trees, digging wells, things like that. They become habituated, and they think they're a good person. And in one sense they are. They're a good, you know, materialistically speaking, they're a good person. Yet the mode of goodness itself is binding. One becomes attached to the mode of goodness. And this is, after all, just a mode of material nature. It's mundane. We need to transcend that. So we need to, okay, come to the mode of goodness. This is the platform of illumination. This is the platform where we can actually see God. We can actually get an understanding, beginning to see who God is. What does it say? Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Param Sada Pashanti Sudaya Gimi Vachakshuratatam Vipanjiro Jagri Vipun Sasamindhi Vishnu Yat Paramam Param. So this verse is from Rig Veda, and it's talking about how the Brahmanas, that they're actually able to see the abode of Vishnu. The Brahmana is situated in the mode of goodness. This is the condition of a Brahmana. He's situated in the mode of goodness. He's able to see the abode of Vishnu, and therefore he can reveal this abode to others. So a Brahmana cultivates goodness. And Srila Prabhupada, in a lecture, explains, a lecture on the second chapter of the first canto, explains how this achieving Brahminical, or becoming a Brahmana, he relates to this verse, Manushanam Sahasesu Kasi Yatati Siddhaye. He says, this is Siddha, this is perfection. Become a Brahmana. This is the perfection of human life. Because from that point, one can actually come to understand Krishna. So, as I'm saying, we don't just stop at being a Brahmana, we don't just stop at getting the mode of goodness, we have to go beyond the mode of goodness, we have to approach Shuddha Sattva. And Krishna explains in the Gita, there's a very interesting verse, I've got it open here because I don't remember the whole verse. It says, Yehi Samsvata Yoga Bhoga Grippa Yonaya Evate. Intelligent persons, this is related back to this section here. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. So the same point is being explained. Is because of the influence of the modes of material nature, this brings happiness and distress. What does it say? Sana sa juni jungle sutra. Krishna says in Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhukti Prakriti Jungle Kananam Guru Sangosa Sat Asat Juni Jungle Sutra. The living entity of material nature he's trying to exploit the material nature. He's trying to exploit the modes of material nature. Why? He wants to enjoy. That's what it gets down to. He wants to enjoy. I am the controller. I am the enjoyer. Krishna points out divine and demoniac natures. I am the controller. I am the enjoyer. This material nature is mine. I want to enjoy it. Yeah? So because the jiva is trying to enjoy the modes of material nature, therefore forced, no choice about it, forced to meet sat asat joni jambasu, various auspicious and inauspicious births. And we see, you don't have to be, you know, so intelligent, you look around. You know, okay, we think this is an auspicious birth. What's auspicious about being born in a human body? Really? A stinky, short-lived human body. Huh? Did everyone go to the toilet this morning? Was it pleasant? Did you enjoy the smell? What's so auspicious about that? You know, all these things come out of the body. All these mala exudations come from the body. Is it pleasant? Just like yesterday, I was doing the parts, you know, someone came running up with a little baby, and the little baby was vomiting and, you know, did something. Is that pleasant? There's only one auspicious thing in this life. What is it saying in the 12th chapter, 12th canto? I've forgotten the verse. Only one good quality. That's the only good thing in this whole world, is we actually have the opportunity to chant the Holy Name of Krishna. Everything else is useless, inauspicious waste of time. Yeah? So all these, you know, we're thinking, sada, sada, all this, okay, I've got an auspicious birth, but what about all the animals and this thing? But you look from the perspective of the demigods, they don't think they're both particularly auspicious. And you look from the perspective of someone in the spiritual realm, they certainly don't think the demigod's birth is very auspicious. From the highest planet of the material universe, Abrahma, down to the lowest planet, all the places of repeated birth, inauspiciousness, where repeated birth and death takes place. So Krishna is saying, there's nothing auspicious in this material world. But because we're trying to manipulate material nature, Purusha Prakti Stohi, we're situated there in Bhukti Prakti Janguna, we're trying to Karananguna Sangha, we're trying to exploit the modes, we're trying to act with the modes and get enjoyment, get fun. Yeah? It's like, you know, this is the Easter weekend. Traditionally, on Easter weekend, it's the most road fatalities in Australia, at least. Why? Because the cars all break on that weekend? Because the roads become bad? No, because people are out there getting intoxicated and then driving cars. It's one of the worst times of the year to drive in Australia because people are, you know, they're hell-bent on enjoyment. The weather's still okay, it's not cold yet. Yeah? And they're hell-bent on enjoyment. They go out there, they get drunk and they drive down the road and they smash people up and stuff like that. So we see, they're here, they're trying to enjoy the material world, they're trying to exploit the modes of material nature for their own enjoyment. Therefore they suffer. But we see here in the Gita, it's saying an intelligent person doesn't do that. An intelligent person understands that I suffer when I try to exploit the modes of material nature. They're thinking, materialists are thinking, I can enjoy by manipulating modes of material nature, but they don't see the concomitant suffering that comes along with that. They don't see that, okay, if I act in this way, if I get intoxicated, there is a concomitant result. You know, if you look at it medically, it has effects on the body, it, you know, deteriorates the brain cells, affects your judgment, your vision, etc., etc. All these different things. You know, people like to smoke cigarettes, they think they're enjoying it. You know, Prabhupada would often say, I don't know if it's still around, there used to be a brand of cigarettes called Cool. Right? And he'd say they think they're cool by breathing in fire. So foolish. You know, the whole advertising, they advertise things to make them look really good. You know? I mean, at least fortunately they banned cigarette advertisement these days, but the cigarette advertisement used to be so foolish, they presented as being like, you know, like there used to be this Marlboro man, you know, he was a really cool guy, you know, he'd ride his horses and do this and do that, and then he'd go sit up on the ridge and smoke a cigarette. He was really cool. so foolish. You know, they're inhaling this smoke, the tar, and it has so much detrimental effect on their body. It causes lung disease, it causes cancer, it causes heart disease, it causes so many things.
Strokes.
It causes bad circulation in your body, which can cause you to lose your limbs. You get gangrene, etc., etc. Yet they're thinking, it's so cool. It's such a good thing to do.
Mm.
Yeah? And companies are making big, big bucks out of it. Yeah? So they're trying to exploit modes of material nature, and it brings about suffering. And the point that's being made here in the Gita is that a person does not take part in these sources of misery, because which are due to contact with material senses. Because why? Because he's understanding something beyond this. He's understanding that I'm not this body. He understands that I'm the soul inside the body. And he sees, there's another verse, just as the body changes clothes. Just like, you know, we all put on fresh clothes this morning. So an intelligent person is seeing in the same way, the soul continually takes on material bodies one after another. So they understand, a person with vision understands, this body is not me. Yeah? Just as we see the wind, it goes through all these different places, picking up different smells, aromas, sometimes nice, sometimes not so nice. So in the same way, the jiva, he's just going throughout these Brahmanda, Brahmani, Kona, Bhagavanji, Guru, Krishna, he's going throughout the material universe, through all the universes, up and down, Brahmanda, Brahmati, Kona. And it's going up and down to all these different universes, taking on various, apparently auspicious and inauspicious bodies. So just like the aroma, it's sometimes nice, sometimes not nice. Sometimes we get pig body, sometimes we get monkey body, sometimes dog body, sometimes worm body. So many different bodies in there. Sometimes human body, demigod body, whatever. But it's just like the wind, it's just going, picking up aromas. So in the same way, due to our actions in the material nature, we pick up different types of bodies. But one who's actually intelligent will see, this is not me. I am not this body. I am the spirit soul. I am a servant of Krishna. And that's what I feel is one of the main points in this verse, that even though this is the lesson that he's given from the air or from the wind, it's like even though I'm passing through this material world and I'm taking on these various situations, as he says here, a self-realized soul may live in various material bodies while in this world, experiencing their various qualities and functions. He is never entangled. Doesn't become affected by the body. Doesn't become affected. Just like we see with Jadvara, Prahlad Maharaj, different great personalities. You know, Jadvara, even as a deer, when he was born as a deer, he did not associate with other deers because he had the realization that actually I'm in this body because of my sinful activities, because I became attached to a deer. I had to take this body on. But I understand I'm not this body. I'm a servant of God. And then in his next life, Jadvara, he just avoided all interaction. He was very careful about his interaction. Prahlad Maharaj, same thing. He didn't become affected by the body. He was the body, he was the body of the son of a big Asura, Asura Varya, best of the Asuras. Yet he still wasn't affected by that. We see Drishtaketu. I forgot his name now. The one who was cursed by Parvati. Chitraketu. When he had a son, then the son was born and then was poisoned. And then when Narad Muni, Angira Muni, they came here, Narad Muni actually brought the child back to life. And then all the residents of the palace were crying, "Oh, my dear son, you went away and we were so disturbed, and now you're back, we're so happy." And they say, "Mother? Father? Which mother and father are you? I've had so many mothers and fathers." So he started, it was kind of really an amazing situation how Narad Muni had brought this child back to life and given that jiva, the realization that they were not the body. And so he was able to preach to his mother and father. Because, you know, if Narad Muni, it's very interesting the way this the sadhu works, because if Narad Muni, he could have easily have preached and said, look, you know, he's not the body, you're not the body, it's just a lump of matter that's going there, and the soul's just moved on to another existence, they wouldn't have listened. Why? Because they were too immersed in this emotion of separation. The child has died, and they're just bawling their eyes out and carrying on like that, and just so absorbed in the bodily concept of life. So his words would not have penetrated. The same thing we see, that when at the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, when Yudhishthira Maharaj was immersed in lamentation of all the slaughter that had gone on, what was it, 520 million people were killed at Kurukshetra, and he was taking the full responsibility for that on his head. He says, this is all my fault. And Krishna was preaching to him, didn't listen to him. Vyasadeva was preaching to him, didn't listen to him. All these great personalities were listening to him. He didn't listen. So what did Krishna arrange? He arranged for him to go down and hear Vishnu speaking. And then he took it to heart. So you see, this so often happens like that, that the saintly persons or the supreme person of God will arrange a situation for someone to speak where the persons will actually listen. So we see with Chitraketu, when the child came back to life and started to speak to them, they listened. So in the same way here, you know, this Avadhut Sadhu, we see that the Yadu Maharaj is listening. He's very interested in what this person has to say. Even though he's, you know, in his situation, he's had so many, saintly advanced persons to listen from, you know, various great personalities would visit the palace, etc., which was quite common in that day and age. Is, you know, the great personalities would constantly be visiting the places of the kings. Yet we see that the arrangement had to be made for this one person to give them that realization, that, give them that knowledge. So, you know, this Brahman is going through all these different, explaining these different gurus, how he's become realized, what's affected him in his life, and the things that he sees. And it's very interesting that to note that, you know, he's seeing so many different seemingly inanimate or mundane objects, are actually he's getting realization, he's getting benefit from. And actually, an advanced devotee is like that. And this comes from humility. If we're not humble, then we won't learn a lesson anyway. And actually, Prabhupada points that out in the, I think it's in the 13th chapter, where he talks about the qualities of a devotee. And there he speaks about humility, and he said, humility is the beginning of knowledge. Because if we're not humble, we can't learn. So we see, obviously, this person is very humble. So humble that indeed that he can take all these other personalities, you know, like a pigeon, a bee, a wasp, an arrow maker, the wind, air, earth, all these different personalities he's taking as guru. So that requires humility. And so humility is also quite a key to making advancement in spiritual life. Any questions? Or convention. Now, by developing qualities such as humility, as you know, Lord Chaitanya points out, is this Trinada piece in the Chinata, Rodi Vasa. By taking on these qualities of, you know, humble like the blade of grass, look at the grass, it's getting walked on all the time, yet still it doesn't protest. And we see like this sadhu here, you know, he's talking about the earth, you know, like so many things happen to the earth, yet there's no protest. The trees are giving, you know, they're still giving, even though there's so much abuse, you know, like the dogs, they come and urinate on the tree, people, they take the fruits from the tree, people, they cut down the tree, no protest, they just keep giving. Yeah. So that's the nature of a saintly person, is they just keep giving. They see their role. They see that actually I'm a servant of Krishna, and my business is to give everyone Krishna consciousness. But we see in this material world that the nature of everyone is the opposite. They're trying to exploit the resources of material nature. Therefore, sada sadjani janasya. Therefore they suffer. Therefore they meet with so many miseries, because they're trying to exploit. Whereas the sadhu does meet with miseries. They can't. Just, you know, it's just like, what is it saying in the Gita? Yeah, it's a verse before this one here, where Krishna points out non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress, like the appearance and disappearance of the same way between diseases. They arise from sensory perception. There's non-permanent, maktrasvasas, it's just sensory perception. You know, like one person will think, you know, this weather is really nice. Another person will think this weather is so cold. It's just sensory perception. We've just got a different set of senses. It's the same thing. Just we perceive it in a different way. So for one person, they'll see something as happiness. Another person will see it as distress. It's just sensory perception. And it's non-permanent. And it just... So a sacred person sees that this is all just sensory perception. They're not attached to enjoying the senses. So still they experience cold, still they experience heat, but they're not affected by it in the same way that we are, because we're trying to enjoy it. So as long as we try to enjoy the resources of material nature, we'll suffer. We'll experience this duality. But when we actually start to understand the situation, I'm not this body, I'm simply a servant of Krishna, and my business is to surrender to Krishna, serve Krishna, and give Krishna to others, then, you know, we actually get to the situation where we're less and less suffering from the mode of material nature. And humility is certainly key there. And also cultivating the mode of goodness, cultivating, this understanding of our situation. Knowledge begins with knowledge, and knowledge begins with humility. So you see, there's a whole process there, you know. We need to cultivate the mode of goodness. What's that? That's knowledge. We need to understand my situation, because this will help me cultivate Sudasattva, pure goodness, purified goodness, Vishuddhasattva, the place where Vasudeva appears. Yeah? So this means that to cultivate Vishuddhasattva, I need to cultivate goodness. To cultivate goodness, I need knowledge. To cultivate knowledge, I need humility. Yeah? This is humility the key. Understand that I'm just a servant of Krishna. An infinitesimal spiritual being, completely apart from the gross and subtle body. This is the state in the Shastras. Infinitesimal. So tiny, infinitesimal. Not this body. And this is the beginning of this cultivation. Okay, I'm finishing. Three times.
As you said, the purpose of human life is to cultivate more of goodness and transcending. In that process, like once we cultivated more of goodness in the devotional service we are, and we are still not perfect, we are in the process, and someone leaves the body, does he get a higher birth or what happens? He can't go back to spiritual world.
We're saying it's like if one cultivates mode of goodness, you know, achieves the mode of goodness, which perfection of spiritual life, we go further. We don't achieve perfection, they leave their body, what happens? Let's explain in the 6th chapter of the Gita. What's that verse? I forget more verses than I remember these days. Yeah, Krishna explains it, because Arjuna is asking the same point, and Krishna explains it. But you know, like if one's a, you know, if one takes leaves their body, and then after a short practice of devotional service, then they're born into a pious family. But then after a long practice of devotional service, they're born into a family of transcendentalists. You say that, you know, Sushinam Shimtam Gehi, Yoga Prasthana Jayate. So that's after a short practice. They get born into a family of Brahmins or wealthy merchants or something. But then after a long practice, they get born into a family of transcendence. And Prabhupada says, surely, or Krishna says actually, surely such a birth is very rare. But I can't for the life of me remember that. I thought it was 636 or something. Yeah, so, yeah. They just get born into. At least that's what Krishna says. Yes, this is the Prakya Punya Kritam Lokam, Uchitva Shashvati Sama, Suchigam Shintam Gehe, Yoga Brasta Vajayate. The unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the Paisa, is born into a family of righteous people, or into a family of rich aristocracy. So, Punya Kritam. Yeah? Then he says in the next verse, Atva Yogina Meva, Kuli Bhavdi Dimitam, Etadi Durabam. Loke Janma Yadi Kisham. Or if unsuccessful after a long practice of life of yoga, he takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly such a birth is rare in this world. And Prabhupada goes on in the purport to explain about his own birth and the birth of his spiritual master. Now, of course, that's Prabhupada's humility, but it, you know, the saying that he was, you know, unsuccessful in his previous life in practicing yoga, because we understand that he came to the spiritual realm to give Krishna consciousness. But, you know, he says, fortunately, both our spiritual master and our humble self have the option to take birth in such families by the grace of the Lord, and both were trained devotional service of the Lord in the very beginning of our lives. So, you know, he's out of humility presenting that, you know, I took birth in such a family because of past long practice. But he's giving the example here that if someone's, after many, many years of practice, you know, will take birth in a family of transcendence. So it's not, never lost. As Krishna points out in the second chapter, he says, you know, that a little advancement in this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. And that he says, in this endeavor, there's no loss of inanition. You know, so it doesn't matter what we do in spiritual life. And then Prabhupada, he gives another explanation of that, where he says that he's talking about, in a class, he's talking about the progression of devotional service. He says that in this life, you know, if you do devotional service up to the point of 10%, then in your next life, you start at 11%. There's transcendental interest. Mm-hmm. So you're always going forward, you're always increasing. Krishna's always adding to it for you. So there's interest in it as well.
Is there a possibility of falling down in the next birth?
Always. Always a possibility. That's in the Gita, it says the nature of the jiva is chara, which means their tendency is there to fall down. Therefore, people even may take intoxication, illicit sex, etc. Because that's the tendency of the living entity. Just like if I knock over the cup of water, the water won't stay in the cup. Its tendency is to flow out and go down because of the effect of gravity. So the tendency is there to jiva, so we must always be attentive. We must always be vigilant and make sure we don't become attracted by the objects of the senses. We have to be on the ball. We have to really, you know, be careful. Because, see, that's the business of the material nature. She's constantly sort of like dangling carrots in front of us to see how serious we are. Because we, you know, to go back home to Godhead, you need to be very serious. It's not just a casual thing. It's not just anyone gets to go back to Godhead. You know, you need to be like seriously focused that Krishna is the only goal of my life. There's nothing else in my life except service to Krishna. 100%. Not even one, you know, millionth of a percent of something else. It's just like we see with Bhagavaraj, who talked about Bhagavaraj before. You know, he was on the platform of Bhava, which is practically the highest thing. Well, one step higher than that is praying. Yeah. He was just before that, just before praying. Yet he had some contamination, he had some material attraction. That caused him to take another birth. So even someone so elevated as Bhagavaraj, because he lost his focus and he became. So you need to be very careful. But the process of devotional service is so easy. It's so nice, it's so relishable. What does the material world have to offer that can compare to Krishna consciousness? Absolutely nothing. If we can actually develop a taste for Krishna consciousness, then we'll find that there's nothing in this world that even comes close to the pleasure of Krishna consciousness.
As you said, Ege Purnandana, only one word. And then Lord Krishna makes in Vrijvasa, send them to Vrij.
Yeah, that's like what we were saying, it says that those who are one point of, or resolute in their determination, they achieve this whole scripture. The Bahu Shakyanta Shoguryo Vyadhisayana. But those whose attention, Bahu Shakya, with many, many branches, Guryo Vyadhisayana, they're irresolute in determination. So we need to be very, very resolute. But this is what I'm doing. This is, this is my identification. This is who I am. And this is my goal. I just keep focused on that. Don't allow things to distract us, because that's the point here that's being made. The wind doesn't mix with these things. It's not influenced by these things. But we have this tendency to get influenced by these things, so we have to avoid that and just focus. And be like the wind.
Just on the same question, the second chapter where the Lord actually advises that in whatever state of being one remembers, when he quits the body, he retains the state of that affair. So that rule actually overrides whatever state of devotional sensation is that he does.
No, it doesn't. It's exactly saying that thing.
I mean, the example you pointed out, the Maharaj, who was in the state of power, he remembered that he actually was taking care of a deer and he was too attached to it, and then the next birth he was born as a deer. So even the state of bhava, where if you remember in that state,
he fell from that state.
He fell from that state.
Yeah. Right. Because he's conscious. That's the point Krishna is saying there. Whatever state of being you remember at the end of this life, that state you retain that fell. In the end of the chapter, he talks about that. So So the idea there that's being explained there is this is bhava, this nature, whatever nature you attain. Achieve at the end of your life, undercolored at the end of the body. Smaranaeva, what you're remembering, certainly in the next life you achieve that. So the idea is the end of the life, rather than being absorbed in all these materialistic things, rather than being absorbed in nonsense, be absorbed in Krishna. Then the next life, that's where you go. Krishna explains the same thing. What's that? He talks about, those who those who worship the demigods, they go to the planet of demigods. Those who worship the ghosts and spirits, they go to the ghosts and spirits. Those who worship the forefathers, that's where they go. But those who worship me, they'll live with me. So Krishna's making that point. Is, yes, this is what happens. But the way to go back to my planet is simply to remember me. So it doesn't override devotional service. It's like we may be performing devotional service externally with our bodies. What's going on internally? That's really what matters. Yeah. But the external cultivation brings about the internal meditation. And so by doing all these external things, it purifies our existence. That's why we engage in all these different activities. It's not just because we've got nothing else to do. It's not because someone's trying to make money out of us or something. No. It brings about the internal purification. So by engaging in these external things, like Mathura is worshipping the deity, we're listening to the Bhagavatam class, and we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're taking Krishna Prasad. All these externals, devotees are cooking in the kitchen, etc. All these externals bring about the internal purification, bring about the internal meditation upon Krishna. So that's the idea, is to keep ourselves constantly engaged. So then we get to the point of Kirtaniya Siddhartha, that we're constantly chanting Krishna's name. There's no cessation. And we see, even there's an interesting story about Mahaprabhu. He was so absorbed in chanting the holy name that when he went to the toilet, he tried to bite his tongue so he'd stop chanting, because he thought, well, no, it's contaminated, they can't chant in the toilet. And he actually bite his tongue would keep vibrating, he couldn't stop. Interesting story. I'll just read the third one, I forgot to read the third one. Although we experience the wind as fragrant or foul, depending on the aroma it carries, the wind does not in fact change its actual nature. Similarly, although we regard a particular person as strong or weak, intelligent or retarded, beautiful or homely, good or bad, the pure spirit soul, who is the actual person, does not possess any of the qualities of the body, but is merely covered by them, just as the wind is covered by different aromas. Thus, a Krishna conscious person is always aware that he is different from the temporary body. He experiences the various transformations of the body, such as childhood, adolescence, adulthood, and old age, but although he experiences the pains, pleasures, and qualities and functions of that body, a Krishna conscious person never thinks that he is the body. He always understands that he is an eternal spirit soul, part and parcel of Lord Krishna. As stated in this verse, Ayujate Yogi, he is not entangled. The conclusion is that one should never consider a Krishna conscious person in terms of bodily designation, but should see him as an eternal servant of the Lord. Jai Jai Guru.